Finding purposeful work, what does that mean in today's world? A recent Gallup poll shows that more than half of American employees are ready to leave their company. Why? Well, one of the big reasons is that they don't find their work to be meaningful. Of course, the whole concept of meaningful work means different things to different people. At Bates College, students are being asked to think deeply about this idea. The college is 4 years into an initiative called Purposeful Work. It asks students to think about how their work might contribute to a higher purpose than themselves, and it helps them map out what a meaningful career might look like. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we are live from Bates College to discuss this idea with the people behind it. What are your thoughts about the concept of purposeful work? Maine Calling is next, but first this news. From the Muskie Archives at Bates College, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Most everyone hopes to find work that's fulfilling and rewarding, but that is not always easy to attain. Today, we're going to learn about an initiative here at Bates College. In its fourth year, it is designed to help align students' interests and talents with work they will ultimately pursue when they graduate. This idea is not just for college kids. We'll look at how people in all stages of their career can pursue purposeful work. On the stage with me, Clayton Spencer. She is president of Bates College. Rebecca Fraser-Thill is a lecturer here and associate department chair of psychology. And Reed Mishar is a senior here at Bates. As always, we want to hear from you. Are you fulfilled by your work? Do you wish you'd pursued a different career? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome to our guests and to everyone here in the audience here during this snowstorm. Terrific to be here at Bates. Spencer, I'm going to start with you. I understand this whole idea of creating a real strong program for purposeful work was your idea. Why?
Well, I came to Bates in 2012, which came shortly after the crash of 08 and 09, and really tough job prospects for college graduates entering the workforce. And it occurred to me, we spend most of our lives working and seeking great relationships with other people. So it's Freud and Tolstoy said, if you get work right and love right, you're kind of done. And I felt like we weren't quite getting work right in terms of preparing our students. Liberal arts colleges, even colleges like Bates that glory in the pure study of philosophy and religion and science, we are preparing students for lives of meaningful work. And yet we have historically, as a sector, liberal arts colleges, kind of had career services off to the side. And seniors, I think for people in the audience who might remember their senior year in college, go, oh my gosh, I better go down there and figure out what color is my parachute, or how do I write a cover letter and a resume. But work is much more important than that. And I felt like we ought to embrace that and embrace the mission of the liberal arts to help students beginning during their time here, because this work is purposeful for students to begin to ask the questions that link who you are, what your values are, what your strengths and interests are with what you're doing. So that is the philosophy that got us started. And I want to just take a second to say, purposeful work is not a kind of work. We're not here talking about the Peace Corps, although that could be purposeful work for someone. Purposeful work is any kind of work that you figure out, that any given individual figures out, is what they want to do to bring them meaning. And one of the things studies have shown is that people care more about finding meaning in their work than they care about pay, then they care about opportunities for promotion, or that they care about actual working conditions. And the way they typically find meaning is very individual. And that's why we want to work with our students. We've got our hands on 18 to 22-year-olds in four beautiful developmental years where they're growing intellectually. And we want to make sure they're beginning to think consciously and intentionally about what they're doing with their lives. So that's a quick overview of the philosophy. The program has a series of programs that are integrated, and we'll talk about those. I won't go through them all now. And then the purposeful work is also about pathways to success for all of our students. And I want to say this right up front. Bates is very committed to educational access and opportunity for all students. So students who may not come from parents who've been to college or may not come from a fancy professional background. So those students, we've always recruited them. We've always supported them generously with financial aid. And I want to make sure that we're also supporting them in finding pathways to success after college, because they don't have parents who can get them an internship necessarily. So we've got to do that well. So we've brought the concept of work front and center, and Reed and Rebecca can tell us various ways that's happening.
Well, I want to turn to you, Rebecca. So Clayton Spencer has the big idea, raises the money, and then you're implementing it. So what does this mean? What does it look like at Bates? How does a child, a young person, I should say, because many have turned 18, start to examine what purposeful work would mean to them?
Absolutely. So on the ground, what this looks like is both within the classroom and outside of the classroom, supporting students as they reflect on what they're learning about themselves and the ways that they're feeling engaged or not engaged, and then making decisions about what opportunities they want to pursue after that. So within the classroom, we have many, many faculty members, over a quarter of our faculty, have chosen to actively talk about work and meaning and purpose and careers in their classes in relation to course content, so that students are actively discussing what's it look like to work in this field, or what are people doing to build meaning and purpose in relation to every department and program on our campus. And then going out and doing job shadows and internships, where we offer a lot of funding for those internships, and being able to really test out and pressure test their interests to see if they hold true over time. And that's something that Reed's taken full advantage of.
So Reed, what has this meant for you? What have you done at Bates that you may not have done if not for this purposeful work initiative?
Right, that's a fantastic question. I feel like I'm in a pretty unique opportunity. Since this program is 4 years old, I feel like I've grown kind of alongside purposeful work. And it really differs depending on where you are in this four-year spectrum at Bates. For instance, I've taken courses that have a purposeful work infusion component. So this could entail having my faculty bring in esteemed professionals, Bates alum, parents of students to come in, talk about their profession. It usually has networking opportunities afterwards, and students will go on to shadow these people from these infusion courses or intern with them. But I've also engaged in a purposeful work internship myself, right down the road actually at Central Maine Medical Center, and it's helped me guide where I want to go after Bates.
Tell me about that internship. What did you do?
Yeah, it was a fantastic opportunity. It actually had a couple components that came along with it. I had the opportunity to shadow in the operating room, got to see a few open heart surgeries. It was at the Heart and Vascular Institute, as well as meeting patients face-to-face for wound care clinic, vascular clinic. And it actually led to my current collaboration for my senior thesis in both biochemistry and sociology.
And what is that?
Yeah, so I've partnered with Dr. Dervla McCann. She's a Bates alum, a trustee member, and we've been looking at familial hypercholesterolemia. It's a bit of a mouthful, but it does have higher prevalence in the local Lewiston-Auburn area. It's hallmarked by premature cardiovascular disease and high LDL cholesterol levels. So it's been an interesting ongoing project, looking at it both from a clinical, medicinal point of view, as well as a sociological, looking at risk factors that are often overlooked.
All right. I want to come back. I want to make this a little bit broader and beyond Bates. And I know you've done a lot of thinking about this, Clayton. You know, you mentioned that in surveys, it shows that people care more about meaning at work than about pay. But one does need to be paid.
Absolutely.
And you mentioned the Peace Corps. There are all sorts of things we can all think about that are meaningful but are difficult to pay the mortgage on, all sorts of meaningful jobs. How do you want young people and even those listening today on the radio who are a little older to think, or not how do you want, but what are we learning about thinking about the balance between, you know, paying the rent and doing something meaningful?
So I would say there's no contradiction between the kind of work you choose to do to support yourself or your family and finding meaning. You can be a Wall Street banker. You can be a ballet dancer. You can be a software engineer. All of those elements of all of those kinds of work can be a locus of meaningful work for you. And what there's a really interesting study that came out about a year ago from the Sloan School at MIT. And what they found was they interviewed 135 people in 10 different professions, priests from different denominations, garbage collectors, lawyers, nurses, a whole bunch of a spectrum of professions. And they found that people found meaning in different ways, very individualistic, but they did find some qualities. Work is meaning when it transcends the workplace and just you. So they talked about the garbage collectors who said when they looked down the street and saw that it was clear that they took pride in that work. Nurses who may have been doing the very poignant work of helping a patient really through the passage toward death, but knowing that they've eased that for the patient and their family, that was a source of meaning for them. One aspect of it that is built into our program is that most people don't actually think about the meaning work has for them until they reflect on it. So that's not as they're putting the garbage cans in the truck, but rather as they look and see the sweep of their work or as other people acknowledge their work. So I think you don't need to get hung up on a type of work. The key for, I think, a young person is to figure out what they're good at, what animates their creativity, and then try to find an internship, a job that will allow them to feel engaged and in some way, whether it's a task, whether it's the whole job, whether you're part of the moonshot and you're scrubbing the floors, but you're putting the person on the moon. There's so many different ways to find meaning, but it is individual and it is reflective and it doesn't refer to the type of work per se.
So more than finding meaningful work, but possibly finding meaning in the work that you're already doing.
Right. And again, all the studies show that the meaning in the work usually transcends the workplace itself. It's meaning that there was a musician who said when his father came to his first concert, that was when he found meaning, knowing that his father finally understood what he was doing. So meaning is everywhere, but you're not going to find it unless you look for it, unless you're reflective, and unless you're intentional about the choices you make. And that's what our program is set up in a variety of ways to do.
It's interesting. It's sort of what the young people might call a first world problem, isn't it?
I'm not sure I would say that. I would hate to suggest that people who are working across the world in a variety of different at a variety of different levels and different occupations. I think cultures are collective mechanisms for carrying meaning, and I think this is a universal aspect of the human condition. I really do.
Rebecca.
Yeah, so there's some great data to actually back that up. If you look at Gallup, they've done an amazing international research on more than 150 countries. They had representative samples from each of those countries where they looked at what creates well-being in a person's life. And they've boiled this down based on a lot of data to say there's five different types of well-being. There's physical well-being, when we're feeling like we can do what we need to do, we're healthy. There's the financial piece, can I pay my my bills. I'm not stressed out about paying those. The social piece, do I have relationships that I like? And community, do I feel like I'm a part of where I live? And there's a fifth one, right? And the fifth one is the key one. There's what they call purpose well-being or career well-being. And that's where you like what you do every day and you use your strengths every day. And the big interesting piece is that they found when people have that purpose or career well-being, it predicts all of the others around the world. So if we're liking what we do every day and if we're doing things that we're good at, then we're more likely to be healthy and have great relationships and to feel part of our community and to have money. So that really does take it beyond the first world problem.
And Rebecca, you mentioned Gallup. I read a Gallup statistic today that more than half of employees in America would like to leave their job. So how does this tie in with that?
Oh, it's huge. Disengagement at work is a real problem. It affects not only the individual, but it affects productivity, obviously. It also affects home life. There's spillover in a very real way when a person feels disengaged and dissatisfied at work. And it is going to affect all other types of well-being. So we see a lot of people who have not had the opportunity to have the conversations we're having here on our campus and be able to think through the ways in which they may be able to find a fulfilling path for themselves or create fulfillment in the path that has been handed to them sometimes so that they can have a much more satisfying experience. And that's what we're grappling with. We don't have all the answers. One thing I love about our Purposeful Work Infusion Project is sitting down with the faculty members in the project, and we have lunch meetings and afternoon meetings where we grapple with this. We say, we're all figuring this out ourselves on a daily basis. How do we do this alongside our students and help them think this through?
So, Reed, if I remember correctly, it's kind of scary to be 22 years old and about to step out in the world. This process helped with that?
It certainly has. And I'm not just saying that for the Purposeful Work team in the audience. But what I find most beneficial from the student perspective about Purposeful Work is that it really, it's dynamic with you. It's meant to change as you grow and develop over the 4 years. And there's so many different ways. It's not just the internships. It's not just, the infusion classes. But there's so many ways that purposeful work is ingrained on campus. And I think the stats even show on an institutional level how students have higher competencies in terms of networking. I meet with students on a day-to-day basis to do resume and cover letter work, and I think that's also growing over time, and students are becoming more aware that this is a valuable time in their lives. And it is scary, certainly, but I think purposeful work is a good treatment for that.
All right. Well, we do have to take a quick break. If you'd like to join the conversation, we'd love you to call 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible. Thanks for your support.
Taking control of your life in 2018, maybe getting in shape, asking your boss for a raise, well, you might be going about it all wrong.
Our problem, I think, is that we focus very much in our lives. We're very intentional. What are we going to do? How are we going to do it? But we give short shrift to the question of when, and it has a big role.
I'm Ari Shapiro, the social science of good timing, this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Join us for All Things Considered every weekday evening from 4 to 6:30. Right here on Maine Public Radio. Tonight at 10 o'clock on Maine Public Television, it's Understanding the Opioid Epidemic, a program that combines the stories of people and communities impacted by the epidemic, along with information from experts and those at the front lines of combating the crisis. The program will trace the history of how the nation wound up in this situation and provide possible solutions and directions for handling it. That's Understanding the Opioid Epidemic, tonight at 10 o'clock. On Maine Public Television.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling, live from Bates College. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we're talking about the concept of purposeful work. With me here at the Muskie Archives, Reed Mishar. He's a senior here at Bates. Rebecca Fraser Thill is a Bates Lecturer and Associate Department Chair of Psychology, and Clayton Spencer is President of the College. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. And I certainly hope that members of our audience will come up and ask questions here as well. I'd like to take this conversation a little broader than Bates College, and you all have learned so much here in the last 4 years with the Purposeful Work Initiative. What have you learned that the rest of us could use?
I think one thing we learned is to spend time on program design and realize that only a really well thought out program with strong staffing and structures and clear deadlines and all of that stuff is really key to having the experience be effective for busy young people. I think that would apply anywhere. And we took a year here at the college to have a faculty and staff committee think about the philosophy. So they spent a year, which is probably only going to happen in a liberal arts college, but a year developing the philosophy, and then we spent 2 years designing the programs, talking to employers, talking to our students, so that when we took the program live, it is very high functioning and very pragmatic. And so I would just say that's just a lesson about design thinking, and that applies anywhere, whether you're trying to change the atmosphere in your workplace, the way you do certain business processes that do or don't create more tedium for people. It has broad applicability.
How about some tips,
Absolutely.
Rebecca?
So for those half of people who want to leave their work, I think something that we've learned from working with students and doing the research behind Purposeful Work is one thing is talk to other individuals. Don't be isolated. So the networking concept that Reed pointed to, it's not just about getting a job. It's actually about learning what opportunities are out there, what else might fit with you. And you can do that at any point in your life. So anybody who's feeling lost or stuck, being able to think about who do I admire? What kind of work is out there that might be interesting to me? Go have a coffee chat. That's what we tell our students to do, and that applies broadly. And equally, get out of your own head and do something. So is that going and volunteering somewhere and testing out something that you're intrigued about? Sometimes the volunteerism ends up being such a great, meaningful outlet that work starts feeling more tolerable. So you don't actually have to leave that job you thought you needed to leave. And we tell our students that too. Just reflecting and being in your own head is not enough. Design thinking shows us that you really do have to get out and do the work.
We have a question from the audience. If you could tell us your first name before you ask the question.
Yes, this is Kate.
Go ahead.
I'm here today in the audience as a Bates College alum, and I now live and work in Lewiston, so I found my meaningful work. And I wanted to give a shout out to the Harward Center at Bates College. Now coming from the perspective of working in a community organization, I'm at Museum LA in the Bates Mill, and we have had a strong partnership over the years with the Harward Center. It's made it possible for our organization with a small staff and a limited budget to have students come in. We can offer paid internships. We work with professors who have their students record oral histories for us, and I didn't appreciate it really as a student. I graduated just, you know, a little bit, 2011, a little too early for all this purposeful work stuff, but it's been, I want to, you know, put out there that for the community, there's a ripple effect of students going out and doing these things. It makes a lot of projects possible that wouldn't be otherwise for small community organizations. So my question would be how the Harward Center plays into purposeful work.
So great question. And I would say the Harward Center and the way it approached, the way the community engagement was approached at the Harward Center and still is, with great intentionality about how it's defined, conceptualized, the idea that you're applying concepts you learn in the class to real world issues. So that was almost a sub experiment in how you would actually think about this. And it's not an accident that our head of the Harward Center was the chair of the committee that developed the philosophy for purposeful work. So we work in close collaboration, and it's a win-win situation. I think we're both enriched. Purposeful work's enriched by the ongoing work of the Harwood Center, and I think vice versa. I think the Harwood Center has enjoyed the ability to be thinking about these problems in other spheres as well.
All right, we're going to go to Dean, who's calling from Winslow. Hi, Dean, go ahead.
Hello, all. Thank you for taking my comment today. I am an old man, and I've been told that I've had the most occupations of anybody known. And I'm not saying that to be proud. It's more to my fault, maybe. But I've bounced around between trades of carpentry and plumbing and electricity. I've been a wholesale delivery driver. I was a RN for 15 years, which was the height of my career, probably. But I was a dump attendant for 5 years. And throughout all this, I found quite an affinity for sweat and blood work, hard stuff where I like to see the work of my hands and my efforts. And raking blueberries has been the most satisfying work I've found, and partly because of the people that I worked with. I had the fortunate to work with Mexicans all that I could, and loved the guys. They worked together as a team, and I fit in well with them. We worked hard together. I never did learn Spanish, but I've also worked with Jamaicans picking apples, and I think it's important to follow what you love. I know of a man who was head of his class academically, and he digs worms for a living, has for years.
Well, Dean, thanks so much for your call, and I want to talk about this, and maybe, Reed, I'll turn to you, because, you know, the students here at Bates are kids who have been programmed to be successful by a certain definition of what society thinks is successful. And it sounds like Dean here has found some joy and success in jobs that would not fit that definition.
Right. No, that's a great point. And thank you for your question. I would say that's what makes the Purposeful Work program in itself extremely useful and adaptable, is that it's okay to move around. It's okay that maybe to go into college or to go into any trade or profession thinking you're doing something, and having that, you know, we have a ton of success stories with Purposeful Work. And I think it's just as impactful and successful as narrowing down, hey, this might not be for me, or it's time to change. And the same skills, the same connections that you made previously can be applied in the future. And so I think that resonates very closely with the program.
Rebecca, it's a pretty powerful force, though, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It's something that I spend a lot of time. I teach a course called Life Architecture for Purposeful Work that's intended for juniors and seniors to help them think about all of this over our 5-week short-term period in the spring. And a big part of what we do is breaking down this definition of success that's been handed to us and considering what is our own definition. And that's going to be extremely individualized. It's challenging to get to a place where you can embrace that and then start to live that. But a big piece of knowing what success is to you is knowing what kind of impact actually lights you up. And that's what this caller, Dean, was really pointing to. He was like, I feel impact, right, when I'm getting, I can see concretely my labor has had an effect. Some of us feel great when we are interacting with a person one-on-one or in a large group, or we each feel something different from each type of impact we could have. So being able to zero in and know this is the one that matters to me, even if people around me are thinking, really? You could have a bigger quote-unquote impact than that.
I like this idea of a class in career architecture or life architecture, because what we've heard so often, and we know as a fact, is that many of the young people today will have a job that doesn't exist yet.
Absolutely.
So how do you find that purposeful work when it has not yet been invented?
Right. And one way, I loved our caller who said, follow what you love. And he also talked about finding the passion, not in your head and then I'm going to go apply it, but in what he did. He found the meaning. It emerged. So I think the concept, one of the things we work carefully with students on is identifying their strengths, their various, Reed, I think we were talking yesterday and you said you would tell us how that works, the strength finder stuff.
Right. So this is actually kind of what we're currently in the process of with Purposeful Work for the internship and funding program is the eligibility steps. And the very first eligibility step to even consider applying for a Purposeful Work internship or for funding down the road is this thing called SkillScan. So it's a online portal where students log in and take a series of questions that evaluate their interests, their skills, what they'd be comfortable doing, what maybe they're not as comfortable doing. And at the end, it gives you your results and it kind of narrows in. Maybe these are areas you might want to consider if you haven't already seen them. So whether it's data heavy, whether it's collaborative environments, leadership roles, management, programming, it's a really good tool just to kind of kick things off. And usually people end up pursuing internships that are along those results.
Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Pat. Can you speak a little more to the benefits that the employers are seeing?
You want to take
this? Sure. So there's a lot of benefits for employers in terms of having individuals who are highly engaged and feeling fulfilled at work. I mean, productivity goes way up. Absenteeism goes way down when you have an engaged workforce. The physical health, which then affects healthcare costs for everyone there, also tends to be higher, that people are feeling well physically when they're in a workforce that has a lot of individuals who are feeling engaged and deeply fulfilled. So there's wins all around for employers in terms of having people who have high career well-being.
Let me also say that there are real benefits for employers in Maine. Yes. We make a special effort to place a significant number of our interns in Maine. For instance, last year we had 111 interns. 27 were in Maine, and I should put in a plug, the Libra Foundation funded this as part of an effort to stop the brain drain from Maine. We have all these talented young people like Reed coming to Maine, and Maine is a slow economic growth state. There's a perception of a skills gap from the point of view of employers and an opportunity gap from the point of view of workers. And what you want to do is expose talented people, regardless of age and stage, to opportunities that will show that Maine is a great place to live and work. So we have something in Purposeful Work internship program that is distinctive called Core Employers. They're organizations or businesses that work with us year to year, and they don't necessarily guarantee that a Bates student would get a job, but they have a process. We know them. They know what we're looking for. We know what they are looking for. And there's a whole host of Maine companies and organizations. Kate is a great example at Museum LA, the local Lewiston Auburn museum that has been historically very underfunded and driven forward by the incredible determination of Rachel DeGrolier. And she came to me thrilled that a Bates student had you worked there when you were a student here, Kate? I thought so. So she had that experience and then came back to do that. And we had students working in the Bicycle Coalition of Maine, Maine Migrant Health Programs, et cetera. 10% of our students come from Maine. So this is a big part of, I would say, the win-win mutual benefit situation that we're looking for in our home state.
I'm Dick. I had very purposeful work, very meaningful work throughout my career. But after 6, 8, 10 years, I had a bit of a burnout. Are you all dealing with this fact, the aspect of burnout and how even though you're in meaningful work, there's a time when you kind of wear out.
I'm going to turn this one over to the expert.
That would be me, apparently. So, absolutely. It's very natural that we all go through a series of cycles throughout our lifetime of finding our identity and finding what's fitting us. Even when you think you've had it all worked out, like you did, Professor Wagner, you were here feeling like, I'm sure, you had landed at Bates College, you're teaching psychology, and then there's a period where it's like, now I have to readjust and figure out what's going to interest me, what new paths are going to take me somewhere. We are trying to help our students be ready for that. That's something I talk a lot about in Life Architecture, is it's about a mindset of being able to be flexible and know what steps you're going to have to take, right? To be able to pivot throughout your lifetime when you're starting to feel that discontent or even full-on burnout. And that is doing things like reaching out to alumni from where you went to school or reaching out to people that you know around you. It's trying new things, so actively volunteering or picking up a new hobby. It's doing that at every point because we're going to continually have forces around us as well. Our lives are changing around us. We're not static individuals that are going to be pushing us to do this reconsideration over and over. And developmental psychologists know we do this at least 5 times in a lifetime, if not more.
Well, we do have to take another short break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. We're talking about purposeful work. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Portland Symphony Orchestra, presenting the Discovery Series concert, Symphony Safari, at Merrill Auditorium, January 21st. More at portlandsymphony.org.
Millions of Americans are walking around with implanted medical devices, artificial hips and knees, cardiac stents, pacemakers, and many others. On the next Fresh Air, medical journalist Jeannie Linzer says medical devices are approved with far less scrutiny than pharmaceuticals, and some may be causing harm, even deaths. Her new book is The Danger Within Us. Join us.
You can hear Fresh Air tonight at 7 o'clock on Maine Public Radio.
Hello, I'm Linda Hunt. New York Times columnist Charles Blow joins us to talk about race, segregation, and how growing up in a small town in Louisiana informed how he sees inequality in the North. That's next time on City Arts and Lectures.
City Arts and Lectures is coming up in about 20 minutes at 2 o'clock after Maine Calling here on Maine Public Radio.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling, broadcasting from the campus of Bates College. Today on the program, what Bates College is doing to help students and others find purposeful work and how this might apply to your life. With me here at the Muskie Archives, 3 members of the Bates community. Rebecca Fraser Thill is a lecturer and associate department chair of psychology. Clayton Spencer is president of the college, and Reed Mishar is a student here in his senior year. Join our conversation. The phone number 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. We're going to go to Scott calling from right down the road in Lisbon. Hi, Scott. Go ahead.
Hi. Good afternoon. Thank you for taking the call. I actually wanted to identify a little bit with the gentleman that spoke earlier about having done many things, disparate things. I, too, have had that experience. I helped build a superconducting magnet at MIT. I went to architecture school. I had a leather and craft shop. But the more important thing that I really wanted to stress is, and I don't think we talk enough with young people about this, is that most of the journeys of their lives that are of interest aren't the journeys that they aimed at, but the journeys they encountered along the way, those serendipitous encounters. And I followed those serendipitous encounters, and it's given me huge stories that I value tremendously. And I think we need to stress that serendipity is an important thing to look at and make a decision about, not just plan our lives at the age of 18.
Scott, I wish you were here in the room with me as I look out on the audience. At least half of the audience members were nodding when you were talking. The importance of serendipity in one's life and being open, I would say, to those serendipitous moments.
And And I would give a great example of that. I couldn't agree more. I have a very checkered career myself. But we have students who go into internships and they think the internships are going to lead to jobs. 21% of students who get one of these terrific internships say, whoa, I'm glad I did that internship because I sure as heck never want to do that work again. And I'll give you one example. This is close in serendipity. It's not quite the high-flying serendipity the caller referred to, but we had a student working in a large business in Maine in client relations. And in order to do that, she had to dig into the database to figure out who the clients were and how to communicate with them. And what she figured out, which is sort of unusual for a Bates student, was she way preferred the data analytics and digging into the machine than she did the work with people. And that was a fantastic discovery for her. Another student couldn't wait to go into public health. They were going to take the public health set of courses here. And they got to public health and they're like, oh my gosh, this is just like a lot of bureaucracy, public health. I actually want to talk to live humans and use scientific knowledge. I think I'm going to be a doctor, not a public health person. So those are small examples, but that principle is very much alive and kicking in the Purposeful Work program.
And I actually, with life architecture, when we named that course, it's not entirely the accurate name for it, right? Because you can't just make a blueprint for what your life's going to be and then follow it. And I think that's something that we are trying to impress upon our students by having speakers come in, both into the classroom, into speaker series called Unplugged, because every single one of those speakers comes in and talks about how their path was nonlinear. It is so rare to have a linear career path, and often it was serendipitous moments that made some huge changes. So many students will say to me, I don't know what I want to do with the rest of my life. And I say, yeah, who does? You shouldn't know forever. It shouldn't be planned out. That would be really boring, actually, if you knew every step you were going to take for the rest of your life. You're going to have amazing encounters that you can't see coming. And if you can be open to those and have that mindset to be able to take advantage of those, that's going to make for a really dynamic, enjoyable existence.
Scott, thanks so much for your call. We have an email from Jane. All this project stuff is the stuff of applied vocational experiences that, along with providing positions for people who work in this project, a liberal arts college needs to emphasize the liberal arts. It is through liberal arts education that one studies identity and what is meaningful to them and hopefully to the world. As to doing meaningful work and it paying off in every aspect of life, well, no. A lot of jobs do not offer any benefits or retirement programs. But yes, all work is worthy and meaningful when viewed with good spirit, at least until the worker goes to the grocery store. Thoughts?
So I love that question/critique about the liberal arts. I can assure you the liberal arts are alive and well at Bates. It's what our students spend 8 courses a year, writing theses, working on research with professors. And we actually think of that as a kind of purposeful work. We think of the work our professors do in teaching the liberal arts. A philosophy professor is doing purposeful work. But what we've found, and I think it's becoming much more appreciated broadly, is that when students can see a link between core liberal arts disciplines, between core capabilities they develop in the liberal arts, listening and speaking, critical thinking, creativity, collaboration, perseverance on difficult problems, those also have applicability to the world's biggest problems. And we see that as a reinforcing cycle of meaning, not an either or. And certainly Bates takes great pride in our strong liberal arts core. And Reed might have something to say to this.
Excuse me, you caught me at a bad time there.
You're allowed to drink some water.
No, I think I certainly agree the liberal arts are alive and well here. The opportunity to be both a biochemistry and sociology major, sorry, two theses to be involved in community service work at the same time. It's, you can really dip your toes in everything at Bates, and I think that's what really makes this program and this school special.
We have a question from the audience. Come on up.
Hi, I'm Ellen, and feel very fortunate to still be passionate about my life choice. I'm a University of Maine undergraduate, and then went on to Boston, and I'm a arts-based child psychotherapist working with kids in trouble from all areas. And I've had a number of interns through the years, through the University of Maine, and equal to the richness of the internship under my wing was the opportunity for these interns to get together and share notes. And I just wondered if Bates provided that intervals beyond the classes. I think there was real richness in
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. So our interns, yes, great question. Our interns are part of a cohort, a virtual cohort, in which they get to work with each other. And Reed was a part of that virtual cohort, actually.
Yep. That was one of the most fulfilling parts of, I would say, my purposeful work internship over at Central Maine Medical Center was the opportunity to, again, beyond this kind of online portal, seeing what other interns from all across the United States were doing, what they were finding to be the most beneficial and helpful in their personal experiences, and then I could then apply what they learned to my own experience.
So with the online dimension, the sharing of notes is just that much easier. So each week, we have 70 purposeful work interns out there, or no, I said 111. We have 111 out there somewhere. They could be in Rwanda. They could be down the street in Lewiston. They could be in California. And here at Bates, one of our staff members sends out a prompt each week. Take a picture that summarizes your experience. What's the biggest challenge you've had? What skills are you finding most that you're most successful in bringing to bear and that are really required at work? And then the other students respond. So to your point, the ongoing cohort experience and that sense of solidarity is another dimension of purpose.
We have an email from Mary Beth. Recently, it caught a lovely clip of former Vice President Joe Biden consoling Senator John McCain's daughter, who was sharing about her father's cancer diagnosis and prognosis. Joe Biden was eloquent. He stressed the good things John McCain had done to impact our world. At one point, he quoted someone, I can't remember who said, "There are three keys to happiness, someone to love, something to look forward to, and purpose." I immediately wrote this down. I am incredibly fortunate that my job as a pre-K teacher in a public school gives me these three things daily. I am way past the age of 22 and want to advise younger people that there are so many wonderful things to do out there, and with a life well lived, you have many years to try things on and change paths.
You could have saved us a lot of time trying to write that case statement, because I think you just gave it.
It's great. And that purpose element, it really is key, and it's so individualized. It's knowing what's meaningful to you and has some impact beyond yourself, according to psychologists. So it sounds like she's found that.
You know, we've talked during this hour a lot about internships and job shadowing and trying things on. But Clayton, you're also bringing professionals to Bates to interact with the students in a way that's not really traditional for a liberal arts college, is it?
That's correct. We have, Rebecca referred to it earlier, something called a short term. Some colleges have it in January. We have it in the spring. And it is an opportunity for students and faculty to experiment in a variety of ways. And one of the ways we've been experimenting in the context of purposeful work is to bring practitioners in so that our students can take a very well-structured course from a practitioner. It's one course in short term is all you're ever taking, and you do it very intensively. We've had courses in digital innovation, entrepreneurship, finance, in the arts, music production, graphic design, filmmaking, healthcare administration, urban planning, journalism, and then social organizing and advocacy, restorative justice. So these are a variety of courses that our students get exposed to that actually, again, let them apply some of the principles and skills and interests they're learning in the liberal arts to more practical situations. They've been hugely popular. We've done 19 so far. We've got 5 more coming online this year.
Terrific. Well, we only have a couple minutes left, so Reed, I'm going to put you on the spot. Words of wisdom for somebody who's 18 years old, whether that person's a college freshman, taking a gap year, or going out into the work world right out of high school. From your perspective 4 years later, what would you say?
Let's see. There's a couple things that I would say looking back. Be open to new experiences. Be open to stepping outside of your comfort zone, as cliche as it sounds. But also just be open to not having a fantastic experience at an internship. Like for me, I've done a few job shadows that have been very laboratory research heavy, and that's been a great learning experience for me. It's realized that, you know, I need that person-to-person interaction, whether it's public health, medicine, that's where more my interests lie. But being open to new experiences, even if failing, just have an open mind.
Okay, Rebecca, 30 seconds. What's your final word of wisdom for us today?
My final word, so if I was going to speak to that same group, I would also say that learning to hear yourself is probably the best thing you could learn. So can you know what you really mean by success and what your interests truly are and what you really want to make out of this life? It's the only one you get. So do it for yourself, not for anybody around you, and you're going to end up making a wonderful life for everybody around you in that process.
And Clayton, your last?
I would say it's all about alignment, aligning who you are, what you love, and what your values are with what you do. And what you do can be your work, it can be who you hang out with, it can be your hobbies, but it's that sense of alignment, which, I mean, I guess we hear in yoga, flow or whatever. That is a mystical experience, and it's available to everybody who thinks and explores in the way some of the callers have wonderfully described.
All right. Well, thank you all three for being here, and thank you to the audience here today at Bates College. You just heard from Reed Mishar. He's a senior at Bates College. Rebecca Fraser-Thill, a Bates lecturer and associate department chair of psychology. And Clayton Spencer, the president of Bates College. And, of course, thank you to Bates College for hosting us here today. Roddy Nickpour ran the board today. We had additional help from John Bradford, Dan Works, and Steve Jaskela. And a special thanks to Marjorie Hall for all of her help with today's program. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, the return of Jamie and John to answer all of your car questions. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.